the last word on Today FM with Matt Cooper.
Let's start though with the week trending. We have Brianna Parkins, reporter with Ireland AM, and Owen Tomás McDermott, Managing Director of the Communications Clinic with us. But I suppose where I want to start is, who do we regard as the bigger, I don't know what phrase to use, between Bradley Wiggins and Boris Johnson this week? We know that Boris Johnson has done enormous damage to Anglo-Irish relations by effectively trying to torpedo the international treaty, which includes a protocol on Northern Ireland and the border. We won't get into that now, but Owen Tomás McDermott, tell us about the insult that Bradley Wiggins heaped upon the Irish people this week.
He heaped, I think, three insults on us in the space of 20 seconds. So on Tuesday, after Sam Bennett's fantastic stage win at the Tour de France, fantastic given that, first and foremost, it's a great achievement, but he is also only the sixth Irish cyclist to ever do so. Bradley Wiggins, in his analysis of it, first of all, endeavoured to claim Sam as Irish. The second thing he did was he referred to us as "you lot." And the third thing he did was that he mocked Sean Kelly's accent and said that he was incomprehensible. So I think it is something...
I don't think he used the word incomprehensible.
No, that's
too big a word.
There's too many syllables in that for Bradley Wiggins. But he certainly said we couldn't understand him, and at least we could understand Sam. And I actually think this is something that we should get offended about.
Why, was it not just good-natured banter? You know, the way the lads have a bit of crack on television
together. Well,
it
is all the more annoying and angering and galling that if he did mean it to be banter, that he thinks something like that would be funny. I was thinking, imagine if Sam Bennett was a French cyclist, and that he said, you know what, we should claim him to be one of our own. I would have thought the broadcaster and the interviewer would have said, Bradley, what are you talking about? That's very an odd thing to say. Yet the broadcaster and the interviewer let that slide, and they took this as the acceptance. And so that's why I think these type of things should be called out, because there is a look where you would say, well, why did he do it? Is it this Tory sense of, oh, we control Ireland? I think perhaps it is. There is obviously an alignment of Ireland culturally and societally with the UK. Why is that? Well, it's 800 years of oppression. That's a reason for it. So these are the small things that we have to call out and say, hang on a second, Ireland is an independent, sovereign state with our own culture, with our own society and our own people who are fantastic at doing things, and we don't need people like Bradley Wiggins claiming us for themselves or referring to us as "you lot."
Brianna Parkins, are we a bit overly sensitive about this here in Ireland, or should we, excuse me, if it's not cultural appropriation, the attempt to try and actually claim Irish people of all sporting endeavours, or actors, anytime Saoirse Ronan gets an Oscar nomination, the BBC and various other outlets try and claim her as British, should we be flattered or insulted?
I mean, we had Dermot Kennedy just this week pointing out that he was Irish, and we had Paul Mescal a few weeks ago talking about the same thing. Look, I don't think it's a concerted effort by the Brits. I just think it's sort of pure ignorance. So they're just like, oh yeah, Ireland over there, yeah, grand. Like, they just don't really give a thought about it, I don't think. And the Irish are just as bad at it.
What?
The Irish have been claiming any Australian with an Irish-sounding last name for the last 200 years as Irish. You have a petrol station with the most tenuous link between Barack Obama and Ireland as a tourist attraction. Hordes of these poor American tourists get off the bus in money gold to it. What is essentially a big Supermax. You tricked them into going. It's fantastic. It's like, I think, a shrine to economic, the economic spirit of Ireland. Like, it's just, you trick people into going to this. It's fantastic. I love it.
On the Barack Obama thing, I heard Cody Keenan being interviewed on one of the podcasts with the rest of the White House staff around Barack Obama. And they said they made huge efforts to present Barack Obama's Irishness. So I think Barack got something from it, and certainly the road down to Wexford did as well. But I think there's also the thing, Ireland didn't colonise Australia, for example.
It did, actually.
Ireland did.
This is a side issue. The state didn't, but people did. And land was taken from Aboriginal people and given to Irish settlers. And Irish religious orders definitely removed Aboriginal children away from their parents. So they were involved in colonisation, and Irish people did benefit from the colonisation of Australia. But Ireland, the state, didn't. Correct.
I did not know that about...
There you go.
Thank you. But I do think there is certainly that thing where we're looking at it to say, well, hang on a second. You can almost draw a line to back to Boris Johnson, Matt, and the behaviour that the British government have had and the disregard that they showed to the Good Friday Agreement.
The arrogance.
And the arrogance that they have around Northern Ireland. There is certainly a line and a thread that you can draw from Bradley Wiggins' comments on Tuesday to also then the comments that they had in the Commons around breaking international law.
I think you're giving Bradley Wiggins a bit too much credit there.
Well, let's move on to Laura Whitmore, because we discussed on the week trending, I don't know how long ago it was, this podcast that she had done, which it was said was a recruitment tool for the British Army. And she said, no, she had no idea that it was, even though there had been a hashtag ad put on the post. And now it has turned out that actually the whole thing was paid for by the British Armed Forces. How embarrassing is that for her?
Oh, Laura, you know what? She tried to say, look, it was about body image and mental health. And then the Times did an FOI and it was, no, it was a direct recruitment. And again, then the British Army came out and a spokeswoman said that all influencers were briefed on the background of the campaign, i.e. she knew it was a recruitment campaign. Just a really bad look. She's been caught out on the hop. What I think she's better off doing is like, yeah, lads, I took the British Army's money and then I spent it on a big bag of cans. Do you know what I mean? That's a bit more rebellious. I think we would have accepted that. But trying to make out that it's one thing and then it all coming out that it wasn't is just really damaging.
I have a bit of sympathy for her in the situation that she finds herself in. Getting a huge amount of abuse online mustn't be a very nice thing to do. So I had great sympathy for her. It is. And she is on the receiving end of a huge amount of it since August when she did this podcast. So I do have sympathy for her. I do think it was a very interesting and a little unwise decision. That how could she not have understood that doing a podcast to recruit for the British Army was going to cause a huge amount of hassle at home, given A, the relationship obviously that Ireland has with the British Army and the litany of atrocities that have been done, but also then on the second thing of doing it for an army at all, that there has been criticism at the promotion of armies both in Ireland, the UK and in America over the last number of years. Back in 2018 there were videos played in Croke Park, for example, Matt, around the Defence Forces that were criticised as a recruitment tool for the cadets. So recruiting for armies is not necessarily a popular thing. Anyway, the fact that she did it for the British Army, I think, was a hugely unwise thing. I think it also informs, though, maybe what her people view, that Laura Whitmore is a UK, has a UK audience, and that's who she talks to, and that Ireland is an irrelevancy. But I can't imagine that the money she received from the British Army was worth the level of hassle that she's getting now.
Aidan and Claire says, yet another foolish Englishman makes yet another foolish statement. At this stage, ignoring them is the best thing.
Ah, no, you can't ignore them, though. You can't ignore. Because I'm on it. But if you go back to, for example, Matt, there is a racist in the White House, for instance. There is murdering on the streets of America. There is warfare. If we all ignored, wasn't it a bit of gas that Donald Trump might become president 6 years ago? And look what's happened. Orson Welles, there's an interview of Orson Welles talking about having dinner with Hitler in the early stages of the Nazi party, where he said what was most remarkable about the dinner was how unremarkable it was, how just it didn't seem like much, and look what has happened. So in relation to ignoring it, I don't think that's the best policy.
Do you realise how many listeners you'd have triggered by bringing up Trump and then bringing up Hitler in the next sentence? Anyway, another listener, oh, this is one, I think Brianna, you like this one. Saoirse Ronan isn't Irish, she's American. I mean, is that fair? She was born, yes, in America. Irish parents moved back to Ireland at a young age. She identifies as Irish.
I think it's wherever you feel that you're from is where you're from. Like, I'm Australian to Irish parents. But it's funny, I think we do this weird thing where we like to give back people who annoy us. So we were like, great, Michael Flatley, Irish, fantastic. And then we read his autobiography, he performed at Trump's inauguration. No, he's American, you can have him back. We do the same with Russell Crowe. Mel Gibson was originally proudly Australian and then he went off on the anti-Semitic train and we kind of like, no, he's American, have him back.
We actually used to claim him as Irish as well because his
you
father
claim
was
everyone.
From Adlo,
exactly, yeah, chances.
And then gave up on that.
Nation okay. of chances.
And your geography is a bit off on the Barack Obama Plaza is not on the way down to Wexford.
I don't know. I just know they do a wonderful double cheeseburger.
Right. And just briefly before we go to the traffic, what's a gender reveal party?
Oh, God. I have been trying to get these banned for years. So a gender reveal party, it started off with a blogger in 2008. And she basically threw this made-up party. She'd basically gotten the sex in a sealed envelope at the ultrasound technician. She didn't watch to see what the sex was, then sealed it up, and then she gave it to someone else. And then when they pulled the thing, the smoke would either come up pink or blue, depending on the gender. And everyone would clap and go, great, that's fantastic. And then it just snowballed from there to the point where we had this horrendous story from California where a gender reveal party, it was a pyrotechnic device, basically the thing that lights and sets off the coloured smoke, set fire, and the fire has now damaged 10,000 acres in California. Thousands of homes have been evacuated. Luckily, no structures have been burnt down. But this happened 2 years ago in Arizona, which, and the same thing happened. happened, the fire got out of blaze from the smoke devices, and it caused $8 million in damages and destroyed 45,000 acres of land. This is the second time this has happened in 3 years.
Idiots.
Oh, yeah. Like, just to give you a sense, like, Liechtenstein is 100,000 acres, so they burnt half of Liechtenstein because of a gender reveal party. I don't want to be too pious or puritanical on what people can spend their money on. They're able to do whatever they want. But I think we do have to draw the line where you're torching huge amounts of land to show off the gender of your unborn child.
Actually, the original founder of the party, Jenna Carvin-Duda, said, "Stop it. Stop having these stupid parties. For the love of God, stop burning things down to tell everyone about your kid's penis. No one cares but you." That's from the founder. She's created a monster. It must be horrible for her.
Your man Owen McDermott knows the size of Liechtenstein, but he doesn't know his Irish geography and lessons as well in that Moneygall in Offaly en route to Limerick. However, I made a mistake in saying that Mel Gibson was family was from Athlone. It's Mel's Cathedral in Longford, of course. Ah. So there you go. All right. That's what Mel Gibson was named after, St. Mel's Cathedral in Longford. Okay, so let's move on to other things. And the possibility, new rule, the pubs reopening on September 21st, although there are reports today that Dublin pubs may not be allowed to reopen on September 21st. But there's also conflicting views as to whether music will be allowed, live music or even piped music. And if the TVs are on, if the volume is going to have to be turned on. What do you make of this?
Yeah, NFET guidelines have suggested no music and very, very low volumes on televisions. And this is because not for the worry that people will be up dancing or trying to look at the tellies. It's because when we speak or shout louder, apparently we spread the virus more because we're probably spitting and blowing air on each other, which is a gross thought. But apparently that's the thinking behind it. It's trying to contain the virus, not ruin people's fun.
What do you think, Owen?
Yeah, well, I think in relation to the opening of pubs, a regionalised opening and closing is a sensible one, depending on the numbers. And I think then if you look at the rules, they had to come up with some rules that would, A, try and reduce the level of interactions that people would have. So, for example, the table service is a rule that's come in. I think that's a sensible one. Also, reducing the amount of people at a table, again, is a sensible one. And as Brianna has said, trying to find ways that ensure that people mightn't be up and down, up and around dancing or kissing or hugging, but even shouting at the telly, I think, as you come through, that there will have to be some guidelines. There is, of course, the view that there are 3,000 pubs. Each one of those pubs is probably different. So I suspect if you're in a small pub in Rossmuck where there's three elderly men having a pint, that the 6-1 news can be on loud and they can come through and they can hear it. But there should be some flexibility around it. But they did have to come up with some set of rules that would be able to be applied on some of them. And I think, look, it's sensible enough and publicans will certainly welcome the opportunity to start doing business again. And I think that's sensible for everybody else if the rules are applied to the letter.
Yeah, but NFET are now apparently have advised the government that the pubs in Dublin should not be reopened on Monday week. How will Dubliners react, do you think, to that? Well, there are pubs open and they're serving food, but there are still lots of pubs in Dublin which haven't reopened.
The wet pubs in Dublin, especially in the inner city, has a huge amount of wet pubs because generally people are here to have a drink after work, not really go out for dinner. I think there won't be outright riots, but I think there is this real kind of fury that, you know, Dublin is a high density place, there's going to be more cases anyway. I think there's going to be a lot of frustration from people living in Dublin that they've been singled out.
Listener says, we can't sing in school, never mind in pubs. Have the children been stopped singing in school?
I have heard of this. And even this has happened in Australia too, when the kids have gone back earlier. They've banned school assemblies and singing because when you sing,
that actually makes sense.
You project gross stuff like spit and germs.
So no school choirs.
Yeah.
And that's even one of the reasons why they thought, for example, in meat factories, amongst a whole host of things, but that given that it's a very noisy environment that they're working in, they had to shout and that could pass it as well. As well as the shiny surfaces, the temperatures and the living quarters of some of the people who work there. But that was one of the reasons.
It's Brianna Parkins and Owen McDermott who are here today with us for the Week Trending. Owen, of course, we had all the controversy about Golfgate in recent times and a lot of reference back to the Bobby Storey funeral in Belfast a couple of months ago now at this stage. But Fine Gael seems absolutely determined to make this an ongoing political issue. How and why?
Well, how and why the Taoiseach yesterday has really come out again on this, because he has said there is a lack of consistency, a lack of accountability on Sinn Féin, and there is hypocrisy in there. I found it interesting. It all stems from Michelle O'Neill making comments and expressing regret in relation to the behaviour and the attendance at the funeral. People remember Bobby Storey was buried back in... Well, he wasn't buried.
This is the key point. Yeah,
he was cremated. He died at the end of June. He wasn't buried, which is partly the odd thing.
Yet they went to Milltown Cemetery where people are buried. Gerry Adams did an oration, and then they went elsewhere for a cremation with a smaller crowd.
And that's why I think it's interesting. If you look, Michelle O'Neill was really under no pressure to make these comments, and so you do have to give her some credit for making them. But what these comments do show is the rank hypocrisy in how Sinn Féin have handled this, where they had gatherings that broke the guidelines on the social gatherings, that Michelle or Mary Lou MacDonald would have said in relation to Golfgate that there seemed to be an old boys club, a sense of one rule for them and a rule for the rest of us. There's certainly a sense that there was an old Sinn Féin IRA club and one rule for them and the rule for others, because I'm sure many people listening to this would say, well, hang on a second, I know people who couldn't go to funerals, I couldn't go to the funerals of loved ones, and they're very disappointed and very upset about it. And there is that, certainly the hypocrisy around how they have handled this story and this element.
What do you make of this, Brianna?
They've completely given their opponents on both sides of the border a free kick. I mean, I couldn't go to my own uncle's funeral, and I did feel a sense of rage. And there wouldn't be, I don't think, anyone out in the community who doesn't feel like they've been aggrieved and they've been robbed of something from COVID. So why would you just give yourself a free kick and then undermine your position when something as good as Golfgate lands in your lap and you feel like you can't, you're a bit of hypocrisy slamming it?
Listener says, Golfgate, no comparison. But I think the point, which is only becoming clearer in recent times, is that there wasn't a funeral at Milltown Cemetery. It is, as was called by Leo Varadkar, a political rally. So that is an interesting point. Millennials apparently are experiencing more difficulties coping with COVID-19 workplace disruptions. This applies to both of you, I think, doesn't it? Brianna, first to you. Tell us about this study and what you make of it.
So this study was interesting because I thought it would focus on things. I thought living conditions would tie in from working from home and the difficulties around working with COVID. But this survey seems to look at some more sort of organisational things. So they're saying that millennials, people aged 24 to 40, are having difficulty balancing family and supervisory roles because they're sort of moving into middle management now, but they're not having the support of kind of seniors around to bounce ideas off, and they're really struggling from a supervisor level. They're not getting the support they need. But I found it really bizarre because I would think the hardships would come into the fact that most millennials, like myself, are living in share houses or, you know, their parents' houses. They're trying to work where there's four or five other people in the house trying to work in the same small space. I think that would be kind of more the source of stress and anxiety.
Well, I think Brianna's right in the bizarreness of it, because you see, 24 to 40 is a very broad church. So if you look, for example, the 24-year-old maybe in their first job, having to work from home will be very difficult. They might need supervision. There might be 37-year-olds who have a child. They were trying to parent, homeschool and work from home and probably failing at all or trying their best at it, but it's very difficult to do. So by trying to genericise everybody into an age bracket is actually unwise, because it irons flat kind of the subtlety of humans. So there are people listening to this who are between 20 and 40 and they're having wholly different experiences of COVID-19, of working from home. So for example, one of the things that we mentioned, this is the difficulty around the workplace. From our experience of working with clients, they're all struggling across all ages. The managers are struggling to manage. The staff members are struggling to get developed, to be coached, to be mentored. So I think this is interesting to say that they're struggling. I just don't think it is wise to have us all in this big
bucket. But if they have jobs, because it does look as if younger people disproportionately are losing their jobs and particularly lower wage jobs. And then you also have a thing, a lot of people in the younger millennials in their early 20s who might be coming out of third level education, there are no jobs to go to.
No one's hiring. There's effectively a hiring freeze. Everyone's scared to take on new people. And if they are getting hired, like, what's the onboarding process like if you've never worked in an office before and suddenly your instructions are coming through a computer screen? Incredibly difficult.
Onboarding. This is a new word, isn't
it? Onboarding.
But no, it's dead right. And how do you build relationships with your colleagues, which are key to getting stuff done? How do you progress if your manager isn't watching how you're getting on? How do you, again, do a proper meeting or a proper presentation where you don't have all of the information to hand? It's very difficult for people to have come through. I just don't think it is simply millennials that are struggling. I think lots of people across the age category are finding it hard, and businesses are finding it hard to do it as well.
Listen, both of you, thank you very much for coming into studio. studio because this is the first time since early March that we've been able to do a Friday Week Trending where everyone has been in studio together. So thank you very much for braving it to come in here.
It's nice to be back.
Brianna Parkins, Owen Tomás McDermott from Ireland AM in the first case, the Communications Clinic in the second. Thank you both for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper. Listen live, on air, from 4:30 weekdays on Today FM.